Good evening and welcome to tonight's performance of the Royal Philharmonic Chainsaw Massacre with your hosts, Matt and Freya.
Hello!
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very good, very good. As promised, we're back with another episode.
Yes, yes. We actually did editing and stuff. And we're getting there, we're getting back into the swing of it.
Yes, give yourself a pat on the back. Good stuff.
Pat on the shoulder. What have we been up to?
We've started getting through our Christmas movie watching.
We have. Today we watched the fantastic film This Christmas.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I need to explain This Christmas to any of our listeners. Everybody knows that film.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's such a great film. It is a pinnacle part of our Christmas viewing now.
It is. We might even watch it again before the year is out.
I'm going to watch it on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. What else have we been watching? Oh, we watched Black Christmas for the first time.
We did. So the most recent version of it.
On Netflix.
It was fine.
Yeah, it's all right. And then you watched The Muppets Christmas Carol.
I did, which is one of my favourites, but you not so much.
Yeah, just, it's not that I hate it or anything like that. It's just I hadn't seen it for years and years and years. And then when I rewatched it, it was like, meh, it was all right.
No, you're wrong.
Sorry. So, should we crack on?
Yes, let's.
Right, today's episode. We are doing our third interview special, and we talk to fellow podcaster and historian extraordinaire, Ollie from History Emporium and Pals Podcast. Ollie started this unique podcast during the pandemic, a show which brings history to the masses in a punky, fun, and enlightening way. Ollie shares his top 10 horror films with us, and we dig down into why he made these interesting choices.
Indeed, yes, some very interesting choices.
So strap yourself in for Ollie from History Emporium and Pals Podcast, Horror Films.
Welcome, Ollie. Thank you so much for joining us. How's it going?
Oh, I'm so honoured to be asked to be on here. I love film and I love horror, so this is a match made in heaven. And I love you guys.
Thank you.
We love you too.
Sorry, that came last, didn't it? It should have been you guys first. I love you guys, I love horror, and I love movies. There we go.
Thank you so very much.
Very glad to hear it.
We both love your podcast as well. I'm so glad that you're back on the airwaves.
For now. I'm so flighty. We'll see how long it lasts. But thank you. Thank you for your kind words.
It was so nice to hear you do about the Titanic today. That was fantastic. So nice one. That was a really good episode.
Oh, thanks. I'm lucky to have Patrick, who knows his stuff. So I'm filler noise most of the time.
Well, that's okay. You're there to bring it to the wider audience, so that's good.
To the masses, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into it. Before we start with your top 10 horror films, I would like to know what your first introduction to horror was.
So, my dad is a little bit older than my mum, so he had me when he was like 42. Mm-hmm. So my mum would work evenings, and I think as a 42-year-old man, he wasn't really aware what was appropriate to put on television for a child. So I remember this big hoo-ha about it the clown, the first, the Tim Curry version coming on telly, and being like, oh my god, I want to watch that. And at first he was like, oh no, that's not really appropriate. But then within like 5 minutes, just caved and was just like, fine, watch it. So I'm sitting there watching Tim Curry be all scary. And my mum came back from work and was horrified that my dad had allowed me to watch It the Clown. So that was my first vivid memory of horror, I guess. Horror forced upon me. Sort of moving on, when I actually chose to watch a horror film, I think me and my friends like snuck in to see Sleepy Hollow, which, debatable, is not really a horror film, but a ghost story nonetheless. So we sneaked into the Cineworld at Stevenage in Hertfordshire, and we were like naughty school teenagers thinking we were like really hard going to watch this horror film. And ever since then, anything macabre, anything dark, I'm on board.
Fantastic. Pennywise is a hell of an introduction to horror, especially because he targets children specifically.
I know, definitely. I mean, this isn't a horror film at all, but again, my dad being a little bit irresponsible, I guess. Can you remember Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and the Child Catcher?
Yeah. Oh yeah, God yeah.
Oh my God, my dad, if we were just really naughty, all he'd have to come up to us and say is, "Lollipops and Smitties, children, all free today." Terrified. I'd do anything that he'd said after that, so yeah. I mean, is that borderline abuse? Should I go see somebody? I don't know.
I think you should have informed somebody about this, you know, to stop the madness, but yes, that's quite an evil thing to do to your son, it has to be said.
Depends how naughty you were, I guess.
I don't think I was that bad. I just, yeah, I don't know. He was just in his mid-40s. We were family number two. I don't think he could be bothered with being strict anymore. So
fair enough. So on that note, what draws you to a horror film?
So, I mean, as you know, as movie buffs yourself, you kind of get different things from different movies at different times. So it all depends on kind of what mood I'm in. I really love the 70s intense horror films with the music that's almost screeching and off key. It really, there's something about it, it really draws me in, and it's really unsettling. If I was naturally going to go for a horror film that I wanted to be genuinely scared at, it would probably be the 70s films like The Exorcist, The Omen, all that sort of shebang. But I mean, even to modern day, sometimes I find horror films are scarier when they don't show you anything and they allude to things more. So it's more like a psychological journey rather than, here's a scary monster. Although they do have their place as well. So I know that's quite a vague answer, but it really depends what mood I'm in.
Sure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm the same way. And I don't think there's any category that I avoid, but it does depend what mood I'm in. Is there anything that you really just do not have any time for? Anything you completely avoid in horror?
It's not necessarily like the any genre of horror that I avoid. Because I'm quite a stubborn person, if there's some hype around a horror film, or if there's some hype around like a new TV series, I'll avoid it. I'll be like, no, not watching it. And then about 3 years after it's all finished, I'm like, oh guys, have you seen this horror film? I'm very late to the party. But I was a bit like that with American Horror Story. There was so much hype around it, and I was like, no, I'm not biting. And a few years later, I did, and then I bloody loved it. And all I talk about now is like, have you seen this? And Jessica Lange is amazing in this, and blah blah blah. And I mean, even, I know this is controversial to say, even Lady Gaga in The Hotel, American Horror Story, was quite good.
Oh, she did a really good job.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's much controversy there. She's a damn fine actress. I mean, I haven't seen A Star Is Born, but I hear she's pretty good in that. And her playing what is essentially a vampire, I'm down for that.
Yeah. I loved it. Avoiding stuff is definitely hype rather than the actual genre.
Yeah, I'm very similar. There's one film I still refuse to watch because people kept telling me it was great, so...
What film is that?
It's in Bruges, okay. It's a whole thing.
Right, okay, fine. Yeah, you sound very much like me. As soon as someone tells you to do something, you're like, no, not doing it. Even if I know that I'll enjoy it.
Yes.
Definitely not doing it.
It's terrible, isn't it? I have to come to it at my own time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, when I'm ready.
Yeah.
Don't force me.
Yeah.
I'm a bit like that with Squid Game at the moment. Everyone's banging on about it, and I really want to watch it because it's right up my street. But I'm not on purpose, because I'll wait probably about 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm currently on 1.5 episodes of Squid Game, and I haven't picked it back up. Not because I didn't like it. I was just like, eh.
Well, yeah. I watched it without you because my curiosity got the better of me with lots of things people were posting online. And I was like, right, I need to know what this is about now. It's good. I'm not going to tell you to watch it, though.
No, because I definitely won't. I'll get there in my own good time.
So, finally, and this is open to interpretation, what do you want to get from a horror film?
So, I was thinking about this really hard today. And the horror films that I tend to get drawn to, and what I want to get out of them, is that sort of blurred line between what is real and what's not. So a lot of the films that I'll probably talk about today have probably got a mental health element in them,
okay,
or a sickness element in them. And it's are they sick? Are they hallucinating? Is it real? Is it there? Is it not? Then blurred lines between reality and not. Yeah. Someone who has suffered from mental health themselves, it very much, I get it. Mm. So sometimes, like, not knowing what's real and what is your mind just playing tricks on you, or are you genuinely seeing something that the world is not seeing? And it's the not knowing that freaks me out the most.
Right.
Yeah, I get that, especially if you can kind of identify with the scenario of, you know, is it or isn't it real? That's going to be the thing that scares you, that, and you want to be scared by a horror film.
Hmm. Absolutely. I'm not actually a massive believer in ghosts and ghouls and all that kind of stuff. I love it, absolutely love it. But someone said to me the other day, like, how do you know when you're walking down the street that everyone's actually there? Everyone that you see is there. And that's just such a mind fuck, isn't it? And I love that. Like, and I want that from a horror film.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really like that concept, because now it makes me judge people even more as I'm walking down the street. Like, is that a ghost or a postman?
Especially in this hipster culture where people are sort of harping back to the past. You've got the steampunks and you've got people dressing like the Peaky Blinders and stuff. Like, are they genuinely just copying a fashion at the moment? Or are they genuinely from that time?
Mm.
I think Camden Town is possibly the most haunted place in the world then.
Can you imagine?
Definitely.
All right, cool. Thank you so very much for that, mate. Right, let's crack straight on with it. What is your number 10 favourite horror film of all time?
So, do you know, putting these in order were really difficult. So apart from number one, they are in a random order because it was just so hard to put them in order. So I have a list in front of me, but number one is definitely number one. So, in no particular order, I am going to go, first of all, with the most recent horror film that I've watched, potentially, is St. Maud. So, I was only introduced to St. Maud a few weeks ago, actually. Mm. It's a British-Irish film, which is my preference. I don't know if it's because I can relate to it more, because obviously I'm from here. I'm quite well-travelled in Britain, so I know the places that people go to, so I can relate to it slightly better.
Yeah.
But this is the epitome of this mindfuck thing that I was talking about. We don't know what's real. We don't know if she's suffering from mental health or if she is on a path of psychosis or if she genuinely is seeing religious ghosts, etc. It's just such a mindfuck and I love it.
That's a good shout. I have to say, St. Maud was a film which, it's totally a horror film, but it's a really, really good drama as well, you know. And I can't remember, what's the name of the director in that?
Director is Rose Glass.
Excellent, excellent. They're one of the promising young directors up and coming, and I look forward to anything that she does. But I'm not going to give spoilers away for it. But the last couple of minutes of that were intense, and like you said, you didn't
so
know.
Intense.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it's just a fantastic film. That is a good shout for a number 10.
Yeah, very, yeah. Very, very haunting in a completely new way to me. And I went into watching that film with no real preconceptions about what would happen, and I was just so blown away. I just every minute I loved, and it really stays with you afterwards as well, which is fantastic with a horror.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it harks back to that. As a historian, a lot of people who are suffering from mental health issues or horror stories that have been written have all got this strange, culty, religious weave threaded through them. And I just think this just is so well done. And I was just on edge the whole time. I felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that means it's working.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a good shout, man.
Very good. Very good. Well, I'm excited to hear the rest of your list, because that's a great, great choice. What is your roughly deemed number 9?
So I'm going to go in with, again, quite a new-ish film. Old book, but new-ish film. So 1922 by Stephen King.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So the film was made I don't know. I'm rubbish with dates and titles and names and stuff, so I do apologise if I get anyone's names wrong. Yeah, so this was made by Netflix a couple of years ago, and it's actually one of the first films I watched during lockdown on my own, because that's what I do in my spare time.
It's what we all do.
This is based on the book. I mean, I don't know if anyone's read the book, but it's basically it's set in like rural America in the South, and this family live on this large farm. This husband and wife are not getting on very well. She wants to leave. He doesn't want her to leave either, because she'll sell his half of the farm. So I am going to spoil it. Sorry, spoiler alert. He kills her. And then, so the son is there as well, and the son had a part in this. He's very aware of what happened. And the concept is basically what you've killed is not going to stay dead. So loads of weird stuff starts happening in this old, creaky house. I mean, just imagine, you know, the American houses where you've got the porch and the chairs on the porch and stuff. There's lots of rats involved, and it's just creepy. And I think Netflix have done a really good adaptation of the book into the film.
Yeah, I agree. It's a creepy film. I have to say, Netflix have been doing really well. In fact, actually, recently there's been quite a few good Stephen King adaptations. I mean, even It Chapter 1 and 2 were decent. And then there was also Gerald's Game. Have you seen that one?
No, I've not seen that. It's again on my list.
Oh, that's a decent film. I won't recommend it to you because you won't watch it, but it's a good film.
Matt says this. No, not doing it.
I was very hesitant to watch 1922, but also excited to watch it. But I haven't read the book, but I have listened to the audiobook, and it's so horrifying. There's so much imagery in that just is just so creepy and disgusting, and yeah, absolutely, they did a fantastic job in bringing that to life.
There's something about these vast landscape of America that terrifies me as well. So I mean, in Britain we're quite a small country, and I grew up in the country, and there's fields and fields and fields, but you can have like farmland that is as big as a county in England. It is insane. And just to be that isolated in that rural part of the country, I think something about being alone, or maybe not being alone, is terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously in that period of time, there wasn't any quick or easy way to communicate with anyone, which is also very scary, just to feel that alone. You know, it's unimaginable sitting in London, where you could, you know, walk outside and there's someone there to help, or you could just sort of shout loudly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that intense isolation, really, that I think adds to the fear.
Mm.
So, yeah, 1922, definitely recommend it.
Fantastic.
Well done, man. Okay, cool. What is your number 8 in your list, in your mind?
So, I'm going to go for a bit of an obscure one. So, The Village. Now, whether this is classed as a horror film... It's debatable, I guess. I don't know enough about genre of film and sub-genre of film, but I'm placing it in horror.
Yeah, fair enough. So, I'd say it's definitely a horror.
Again, this is based... the thing is, how do I say this without ruining it for everyone? I'm probably going to ruin it for everyone.
It's been long enough. You know, they've had time to watch it.
This is true. So we're based in what we think is the past. Nothing suggests otherwise right up until the end of the film. So it's a small community, again, in rural America. So get the imagery of the first settlers in America coming over from Ireland and Britain and other places in Europe. You've got that image in your head. So it's a small farming communities, and loads of weird stuff starts happening. The adults are very strict on the kids not going into the woods and not going past a certain boundary, and the woods are haunted. And you're just like, oh yeah, because it's superstition. Absolutely. Why would they not? It was that period of time. Why would they not believe that kind of stuff? And all these weird creatures are coming to visit and killing the animals, etc. And it's all really freaky. And I think it's because one of the kids went further than they were meant to go. And it turns, one of the kids gets really sick, and the adults start talking in a more of a modern way. They start talking about medicine and help and support. And you're like, hold on, like, how do they know about all of this? If this is set in whenever. That's not invented yet, and penicillin's not around, blah, blah, blah. But then it turns out that the whole time, these really rich adults have broken away from their traditional lives in the 21st century and created this idyllic old style of living, and they're rich enough to bypass the planes from over the settlement. So the kids and that have no idea that they're actually living in the 21st century and they're not living in the first settlement times. It's just, it's a mind, at the end of it, I was just like, this is, wow. Like, I just wasn't expecting that. Like, there's hints of it, and you're like, why are they talking about that? I just don't get it. And then this guy climbs over this barbed wire fence, and there's all, like, the military and that surrounding it. So these people who have had quite tragic lives have taken their kids away because they don't want them to get into gangs and into sort of modern street crime and stuff. So they do this really extreme thing by taking them to the village.
Mm.
And it's just intense. It's insane. I didn't expect it. I'm quite good at predicting horror films, but yeah, I wasn't ready for that. So yeah, that's definitely a top one for me.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen The Village, and I think because I don't want to ruin my memory of it having such a big impact on me. And it's terrifying thinking that, well, because you rely on your parents to sort of tell you the truth and let you know what the world is all about, but, you know, and you blindly do trust them.
Mm.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. They are your only source of information, aren't they, for a long, long period of time. Mm.
Are you a fan of M. Night Shyamalan?
I don't know who that is. Is that the person that wrote it?
Yes, it is. He's the guy who also did Signs, Sixth Sense.
No, it's funny that you mentioned Signs, because although it's not in my official list, I was going to try and drop it in there. Now that you've said it, I can see it. Definitely the style is there. It's almost like nothing happens, but a lot happens.
Yeah.
And it's kind of all building up to a big twist.
Yes. Yeah, it's been quite a while since I've seen The Village, actually. I went to see it at the cinema, and I seem to remember, like, didn't guess it really early on. I'm not going to, like, say, oh, I guess it straight away. But I remember that there was a moment when the person who I was with had already seen it and turned around and went, do you know what the twist is yet? And I was like, yeah, when is it set? And she went, oh, you've seen it before. And I was like, no, I haven't. I was like, sorry, is that right? Oh, fuck, I've ruined it for myself. I will say that your description of it has made me want to rewatch it, so thank you for that.
Good to help.
All right, cool. Thank you so very much for that. And Ollie, what is your number 7?
So I am going to go for The Woman in Black. Now, I'll tell you why. It's not necessarily because I'm a massive Harry Potter film, because I don't think Daniel Radcliffe is actually a very strong actor at all. But the story, again, British story, it was a book before, and there was actually a film prior to this one.
Yeah, 1982.
That is near on impossible to get your hands on.
Yeah.
But I remember my mum having an illegal copy of it. And so we'd watch it, and my mum was really into ghost stories. She does, like, tarot and all that stuff. Right. So she'd watch it. And then when the new one came out, I was living up in Glasgow, I think, at the time. And absolutely no one loves horror films as much as I do. And I was like, oh, we need to go and see this film. And all my mates were like, no. So I was just like, oh, well, I've got a Tuesday off. I'm going to go and watch The Woman in Black. I kid you not, I was literally the only one in that cinema. This massive screen cinema. I was sitting smack bang in the middle. It was the middle of the day, but I came out sweating. Not necessarily because of the film, but it is quite jumpy. But just because it's so loud and it was so big and it was so vivid, it is just stuck in my brain since then of actually feeling terrified. I genuinely thought my life was going to end in that cinema. I think it's because I was just on my own. I think that's it. And there was no one around. And I mean, the storyline itself is really good. It's quite simple. Daniel Radcliffe version, the ending is different to the original version, which I wasn't expecting. I mean, don't go and see Women in Black 2, though. It's a load of crap. you should have just left it as it was. That idea of being in a house on your own with sort of weird goings on, and did I see someone? Did I not see someone? Is it a shadow? Is it my mind playing tricks because I know that somebody died here? It's all that mind fuck. I can see there's a bit of a theme going on. I didn't realise there was, but there is, isn't there? I like that alluding, is it there? Is it not there? Again, mainly because I was terrified in the cinema on my own is why it made the list.
Fair enough. Have you ever seen the stage play?
No, but I want to. Oh. Apparently that's terrifying.
We should all go together. I've seen it when I was in college, so a very long time ago now. And I was, you know, obviously a cocky sort of 17-year-old, like, yeah, whatever. But it was absolutely terrifying. Absolutely pant-wettingly terrifying. Because it's so simple. And it's only three actors, I think, who perform it.
Yeah.
One being the woman who plays the Woman in Black. And it's just so well done.
Mm.
You know, using sort of lighting and sound and... Oh, it's magnificent, you know. And I think they've probably kept to the same basic staging of it. We'll set up a date.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, just go there in mass. You should... everyone that's been on this podcast for this series that you're doing, we should all go. That'd be funny.
On a field trip.
I'm game for that. Can I just point out one thing, and I'm going to embarrass Freya here. I think it was last Christmas. We were wrapping presents up because, you know, we were in lockdown. We had to wrap presents. And I was watching something like Miracle on 34th Street, you know, something like that. She was sat on the floor wrapping the presents, headphones on, with the iPad, watching The Woman in Black 2, Angel of Death. So, and that's not even a lie. She literally was there watching that for Christmas.
I mean, I respect you more now, Freya, than I did before. So, just you do you.
Thank you.
My sister-in-law, who's also called Freya, messages me, and she's just like, "Are you watching horror films again on your own?" I'm like, "How did you know?" She's like, "You know, you're the only person that does that." I was like, "I assure you that I am not the only person that does that."
But, really not.
Yeah, fine. But the thing is, you've got to balance Christmas out, because Christmas sort of arrives in August now, it appears.
Yeah.
So when it gets to December, you need to make up for the lost time of Halloween. So watching a horror film whilst wrapping Christmas presents is fine in my books.
Thank you. I'm glad I have your approval. So, what is your number six?
Number six, I am going to go for The Others, starring Nicole Kidman. Now, she plays these roles really well. She's been in a couple of sort of horror, psycho, thriller films, and you just don't imagine Nicole Kidman being that kind of actress.
No.
Because she's Hollywood, and she's glamorous, and she's in Moulin Rouge and all this kind of stuff. But I don't know if it's the combination of the pale skin, the ginger hair, the very slim sort of look. She just does these roles so well.
Mm.
The Others, again, is a film where not much happens, but a lot happens. So it's during World War One, and her husband has gone off to fight in the so-called Great War.
Mm.
And she's left at home with her children, but her children have this disposition to light.
Mm.
So she hires a nanny, and she's like, "You mustn't open the curtains. Whatever you do, do not open the curtains. They're allergic to sunlight." So the house is all really dark, even when it's daytime. And she's got like this really loving relationship with the kids, but it's intense, and she's very controlling, but in a loving way. So she's like almost smothering them. Like, I want to protect you. I need to protect you. There's this awful war going on, and you've got this condition. I need to keep you in the house. I stay in the house. There's lots of fog around. It's really dark all the time. And then basically, role reverse, they keep seeing people in the house, sort of ghosts and ghouls and things going on. And it actually turns out, again, spoiler alert if you've not seen it, that they are actually dead, and the people that they think they're seeing in the house are alive.
Hmm.
And it turns out that she was so grief-stricken by the war, and she's kind of lost her mind. She was left alone in this big house, that she loved her children so much that she took their lives and hers.
Mm.
And it's just, I just think it's so well done, because you're like, oh my God, it's so obvious the second time you watch it. But the first time you're like, oh, I just didn't get it. So yeah, I just, again, not much happens, but a lot happens.
Yeah. It's such a beautifully atmospheric film as well. And I think that watching the others, even on a second watch, I'm so tense because it's like something's wrong and I don't understand yet what it is. And there's something weird about the housekeeper and the gardener guy.
Yeah, because they were like, oh, we've been here before. They were like, yeah. They're in Victorian dress and it's set a lot later on. And you're yeah. like, well, how have you been here before? Really well done, I think.
Definitely. And it's Christopher Eccleston, isn't it, who plays the dad?
Yeah.
Who comes back briefly. And that's a really kind of traumatic part of the film as well, because you just don't, you know, he's obviously got trauma from the war, and you just kind of, you want it to be this happy reunion, but obviously it's not. And then, yeah, it's all very, very strange, and it's fantastic when it comes together at the end and you understand what has happened.
Yeah, because he's come back for the war, and as you're watching the film, you're thinking that it's because he's been in war, but actually he's in trauma because his family have killed themselves and he's revisiting them. Or is he dead as well?
Obviously.
Well, he's dead as well. Is that obvious? Did I just completely miss the point of the dad in the others?
Do you know what? It's been a while since I've watched it, but my understanding is that they're all dead.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And he died in the war, but he's obviously, he died elsewhere, so potentially in France, and she's in Britain. They're dead, but they're not together. And they had this really weird reunion thing going on, and then he had to go away again. And then the trauma stays together, like stays with them each, but separately.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that he knows that they're dead. He's acknowledging that they're all dead in certain ways.
Mm.
And there's an allusion to what she's done by him, if memory serves me correctly. Her spirit is in complete denial of what she's done, and that's why she's trying to protect the children so they don't know that that's what she did. And I think maybe there's some kind of sort of cycle hinted at as well. I'm not sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's again with these films, I think it's so open to interpretation.
Absolutely.
Because it's not like this happened, beginning, middle, end, done. It's, well, maybe this happened, and that's what I like.
Mm.
It allows these films that I've mentioned kind of allow your mind to take it wherever you want it to go.
Well, you've got quite a few films that have got twists in them, so yeah. I think that's really interesting. You know, do
I genuinely thought there was no pattern, but now that I'm talking about them,
no,
I think there might be.
Yeah, no, definitely is. I mean, do you like twist endings?
I like to be surprised. Good. I think with any sort of art form, let's face it, a lot of it's been done. It's just being retold in sure. slightly different ways. Music's the same, film, TV, drama. It's all, nothing is truly original, which is why when you get these twists, you're like, oh my God, like, why didn't I get it? And it's maybe because you've not seen it before, or they've told it in a different time period or a different narrative. But it has been told before, but your mind is seeing it for the first time.
Sure.
Yeah. So we are at the halfway point in your list. And I would like to know if you have any honourable mentions that didn't quite make the cut.
I had to cut this honourable mentions down, because when you start thinking about it, you're like, oh, I love that. Oh, I really like that. Oh, yeah, that's really good as well. I have got three for you.
Cool.
Excellent.
So in no particular order, 28 Days Later
Ooh.
Is in there. If I could have had 28 weeks later in there, I would have as well.
Oh, good.
So we could just class them as one film. Let's do that.
Okay, fair enough. Your rules.
There's something really creepy about it being set in modern Britain when we think that we're so big and we're so clever and we can fix everything, and there's a technology for this and there's medicine for that. But this film is just incredible. Now, the zombie film has kind of been overdone, I think, now. But this is slightly off the beaten track, I would say, mainly because it is, again, that alluring, like, what would you do in that situation? It gets you thinking. Like, if you wake up in a hospital room for whatever reason, you've been ill and no one is around, what the hell do you do? Like, and then it takes you on that journey, although you're watching a character sort of leave the hospital and walk into London and there's no one there, and then all of a sudden there's these hints that there might be these super zombie creatures running around. And then you've still got the familiar sights of, oh look, there's a Tesco's and there's a Sainsbury's. It could happen. And not that I want to compare this film to the awful pandemic years that we're going through at the moment. There was a point where lockdown first happened and some of us still had to go to work, and we're walking around the centre of London, and it was like a scene from this film. There was no traffic, there was no one around. You've never seen London or any city so empty. And my instant reaction is this the beginning of 28 Days Later?
I walked down Tottenham Court Road because I was working as well during the pandemic. I walked down Tottenham Court Road, no one. It was so surreal. Like you know how busy Tottenham Court Road gets and like that sort of area. There was just nobody. I don't even think there was a car. It was great. It was brilliant.
I mean, it was beautiful for photos. I took
Oh yeah,
loads,
yeah.
especially in the tube and stuff, like the long corridors that something could be peering around the corner, like you'll never know. And this film, it seemed like it could have potentially happened.
Yeah.
So that's why it made the list, the honourable mentions for me.
That's a good shout. What's your second one?
So The Haunting, which is an old, the Haunting I'm talking about is the 90, is it 99, 2000? It
The
was
Liam
around that.
Neeson one.
And it was the first DVD I ever bought, ever. So that's why it gets on the list. And even now, I watched it. It came on Netflix quite recently. And I watched it and I just love it. I love Catherine Zeta-Jones in it. Like the other characters in it are just great. And this whole idea of luring people somewhere under false pretenses, pretending it's a sleep clinic and it's not. It's about fear and instilling fear into people's minds. And then actually, some really weird shit is going down. And the people who organized it taken out of control. I just loved it. I just think it's nostalgic reasons mainly.
Okay, let me ask you two questions regarding that film. Have you seen the original 1962 version?
I'm going to be a terrible human and say no.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's a film which is it's so charming. It's very, very charming. It's got that early 60s vibe to it. It's very, very good. And then, have you seen, is it The Haunting of Hill House? The Netflix show.
No, I haven't. Are they related?
Kind of, yeah. They're very similar. They are very similar. But then, obviously, The Haunting of Bly Manor is essentially the turn of the screw. So, and I believe The Haunting on Hill House is The Haunting, correct?
Yes.
Good.
Sorry, I just realised that this is a podcast and I need to speak, not
Yes.
just nod.
I can see you nodding. Everyone, she's definitely nodding.
Thank you.
Just do all audio commentary for what you're doing. You can just sign from now on.
So I agree with you. I really like The Haunting as well, that particular version. Again, I think for nostalgic reasons, it's very bad CGI.
Oh yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? But it was the
And
best they had at the time, I
yeah.
feel.
And there are definitely things I cringe at now when rewatching it, but I still really love it. And the main character, I just think she's so innocent and kind of lovely
Eleanor.
Eleanor, yes.
Such a cool name as well. I love it. Eleanor.
But I think you'd enjoy the 60s version as well, which we can lend to you.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, I'd love that. Thank you.
And your final honourable mention.
So I'm going to go for something, again, slightly off track. So the Limehouse Golem. This is bringing my two loves together. Horror and history merged. There's something about mixing the Victorian underworld with horror that I love. It's not particularly a horror film. It's not particularly scary. It's got lots of twists and turns in it. With this one, I definitely don't want to give it away because I think it's got a really good storyline, and there's all this stuff going on. So you've got sidelines of drag and artistry and just what people will do to get famous. You've got sort of the Jack the Ripper killings or Jack the Ripper styled killings. This whole underworld of London, which everyone can't seem to get enough of, and is still potentially going on today, just in a different form. They're not wearing top hats anymore. They're wearing Adidas hats instead, I guess. It's says me wearing an Adidas hat. It's actually me. I am actually Jack the Ripper.
Finally,
the mystery is solved. I've actually been alive for a long time.
Yeah, you moisturise well.
You look good.
Thank you. This lighting is terrible. I need to get this fixed. Awful.
Can I just point out that I have never seen the Limehouse Golem, but I know that Freya has. What's your opinion of it?
I can't remember.
It was that memorable, ladies and gentlemen.
The thing is,
I can't remember.
I watch so much stuff. I just kind of blitz my way through like a horror film termite.
I get it. People say to me, oh, you must have seen this. And I was like, no, definitely not. Definitely not. And then I watch it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I have seen it.
Yeah, so it rings a bell. I can kind of remember bits of it, but I would definitely need to rewatch it and then remember everything as I watch it.
Just a complete mind fuck, basically, of there's men dressed as ladies, there's prostitution, there's murder, there's detectives and police, and there's corruption, and it's just brilliant. So yeah, please do.
Definitely will. Fantastic. Well, moving on to the list again. What is your number five?
So, again, this is quite a modern film, and I have to use this as the trilogy because it doesn't make sense unless I put the three films together. So, Fear Street.
Okay.
The trilogy. So, controversial. I know. It's very modern. What I like about it is you've got the 90s version, you've got the 70s version, and then it goes right the way back to 1666, all based in the same place. And all three stories, or three films, are connected. Now, they jump between 1, 2, and 3 during the duration of the three films. So it's all based on a witch, the legend of this witch. And I especially the first film that you watch is the 90s version of the film. And that's our era. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember people having phones like that. I remember people talking like that. I remember the scream masks. I remember everyone going down to the shopping centre to hang out and meet up and stuff. I remember, them awful sort of killings that used to go on in America, the big shootings and stuff, and it's very harping back to that age of really angry 90s teenagers, which sort of sucked me in because I was like, oh my God, I'm relatable. I can relate to that. And then it had that history thread through it. It linked that 1970s feel that I spoke about earlier very well. And then again, going back to 1666 as a historian, it ticks all the boxes for me.
Well, fair enough. I mean, I have to admit, I wasn't a fan of it, but I like their use of a bread slicer.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was cringe, man.
That was so unexpected, though. I really didn't think it was going to actually happen.
No. Well, they treat the heroes, what we all think are going to be the heroes, really, really badly.
They do, yeah. I was really sucked in with the first one. I enjoyed the second one. Mm. And I think that the third one took me out of it a little bit. I think I really wanted to like it, but it just got a bit too out there. And maybe I just kind of watched them too quickly altogether, that I was a bit kind of bored of it by the time it got to the third one.
I mean, yeah. See, as I staggered it, so I don't know if that's the key.
Might be, yeah. I think, but that's I'm so greedy. I will save it until they're all there and I can watch them immediately.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. I'm the same again with TV series, like I was saying earlier with American Horror Story. Mm. Like, I want it all to be out. I don't want to watch it week by week.
No.
Bring it to me all at once.
Well, fair enough. Okay, cool. Awesome. Thank you very much. Although I shouldn't allow you to have technically three films, but I will because I like you. Okay, cool. What is your number four?
I'm going to go for Sinister.
Okay, okay.
Sinister is one of those films that has always just stuck in my head. It is the classic tale of the family moving into a house where awful stuff happens, the husband not telling the wife, loads of creepy stuff starts happening. There's nothing original about this film at all. I just really like the way that it begins with the old sort of home movies, and you see people with bags over their heads being hung over the tree, and then the tree keeps featuring quite a lot that's in the yard.
Yeah.
Loads of just weird stuff keeps happening, and there's a pattern, and the pattern emerges when they find things in the attic, and it becomes more apparent that actually tragedy has not just happened once in this house, it keeps happening and again and again and again. Again, nothing original about it. It just hit a spot when it came out, when I watched it. I was very into Slipknot at the time. Like, they were it had all that macabre stuff going on. So yeah, that's kind of why it made the list. And it's a regular. I will regularly watch it just casually.
Interesting.
There is something about that film. Now, I don't love it because it doesn't give me enough information about why this is happening. Mm. However, I will watch it. I've watched it a few times and I will watch it again because I love, as you were saying, that imagery in the old home movies and how shocking those images are. My particular favourite is the lawnmower.
Yeah.
Because it just completely catches you off guard. You know something is going to happen because it's a horror film. But it just, you know, the way it suddenly comes up, and that is such a great jump scare for me. Although it wouldn't make my top 10, I'd really enjoy it.
I think you hit the nail on the head by saying that it's not original. You know, it's essentially a more hyped up version of something like the Amityville Horror or name any horror film, you know. But also at the same time, I appreciate that many other people like that film. You know, much like Freya said, I'm not a massive fan. We watch enough horrors that you can almost tell 5 minutes before a jump scare happens that it's going to happen. But at the same time, to me, the way that I see it is that this was somebody's introduction to horror. Mm. You know, this was somebody's Exorcist. This was somebody's Evil Dead. This was somebody's Nightmare on Elm Street. Thank you, Beelzebub, for making these films. So, good.
And it is scary. I would definitely say that Sinister is scary.
It does have a freaky tale to it, so yeah. Mm. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, good.
Awesome.
Choice.
Thanks.
Okay, we are into your top three. How exciting. So, please, number three.
So, this is very similar to Sinister. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Similar to Sinister. So, the Haunting in Connecticut.
Ooh, okay, cool. Okay.
This is, so what I was talking about in the intro when we were having our first chat, this whole idea of somebody, what are they seeing? Is it real? Is it a hallucination? So basically this kid is sick. This teenage kid is sick. He's sort of riddled with cancer. He's like the ex-sportsman and stuff. And the family kind of need to move closer to the hospital so he can get some specialist treatment. he obviously doesn't want to be sick. His mother and father are coping with it very, very differently. Mm-hmm. Not particularly talking to each other. So you've kind of got that separation of dealing with it, how people deal with things differently. So the kid moves into the basement of this house. This house is an old funeral home, which wasn't apparent when they bought the house. Again, very similar to Sinister. It's, we've got this house for like next to nothing. Guess what happened here? So he moves into the basement, but there's this screened room that's kind of blocked off. And he's on this really strong medication. And the doctors are very much like, right, you need to tell us if you start seeing visions. It's an experimental drug. We don't know what's happening, blah, blah, blah. He starts having these, in quotation marks, visions. He starts seeing things. He assumes it's down to the medication. He doesn't tell his family because he just wants to get better. And his mum kind of pushed for the experimental treatment.
Yeah.
And he's seeing all this stuff. Like, his mum's mopping the floor at one point, and he just sees his mum, like, mopping blood all over where the morgue used to be in this funeral home. And you'd never know what's real and what's in his mind. And that's what I like. So that's kind of why it made the top three, to be honest, because it's that mind fuck again of, is it mental health? Is it sickness? Or is it really happening?
I can't remember this film at all. I know I've seen it.
Yeah, the first time I ever saw it was at the cinema, and I remember I didn't like it, but then I rewatched it a few years ago, and I was like, actually, that's not so bad. It's a film that had to win me over a couple of times, but yeah, and it's based on a true story, inverted commas. Yeah, I think it's a pretty decent number three film. Well done, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think I need to revisit it. It's the final two. What is your runner-up?
So these two films, number one and number two, are like chalk and cheese. Right. Okay. So bear with me. So number two is, again, a new film, Host.
Ooh, it's a good shout.
When someone pitched the idea of Host to me, I thought, what a load of nonsense. a film that is based on Zoom. I was just like, oh, the millennials are at it again. I know I am a millennial, but I was like, oh, they're at it again with their new... I was like, oh, it's Blair Witch, but crapper for like the modern age. I watched it. How wrong was I? So the concept is these four or five kids, teenagers, do this seance online, and loads of weird stuff starts happening, and it's just so simple, but it's so clear. It's not like the shaky Blair Witch camera, which controversially them films irritate me because I just want a steady camera. I don't know if I've got the shakes or if the camera's just like rolling around everywhere, but sorry, back to Host. I just think it's so well done. Like, it's not tacky. It's genuinely terrifying because it's just a group of mates having a bit of a laugh, like we're doing now. I can see you. You can see me.
Yeah.
And then, say, for example, those three pictures behind you shattered or smashed or it's just intense. And I just remember watching it thinking, wow, like, how wrong was I to judge this so early on?
I completely agree, and I think that there have been a few recently, things like Unfriended, which all take place on a computer screen, and I think it's just such a shockingly effective way of doing things, and it must be presumably quite cheap to do as well.
Yeah.
Which is why there are so many of it, and you know, I'm sure there are really bad examples as well as the good examples, but The Host is... Is it Host or The Host? Host. It's
just Host.
Sorry. Host is just chef kiss. It's...
I like that.
Fantastic. And such a great surprise, I think. And such good timing as well when, you know, obviously everyone was... That's how we're communicating with each other. I mean, I wasn't doing any seances.
Until today.
Just pull up your Ouija board. But yeah, really brilliant.
I actually have a Ouija board dish that's just behind me here. Oh, it's like a dish where I put my wallet and my keys and stuff.
Nice.
Oh, we can use that, you know.
We could use that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's the same
thing is, I would definitely do it as well. I know a lot of people are like, no, definitely not. I'd be well up for it.
Right, well, I would say come round and we'll do that, but do you know what? I'm one of those people who's like, no. I don't think I could do a seance, even though I know it's just a game, but... Yeah.
I'd be too tempted to fuck around and spell swear words. Boobs.
We appear to have a racist entity in the room.
Can you imagine? Yes, sorry, someone from the BNP has just visited me. You kindly fuck off.
I will flat out say that I absolutely loved Host. I thought it was such a fantastic and well-timed, like you said. It came out exactly the right time. And also, the director had the most metalest fuck name ever. His name is Rob Savage. Come on.
I like it.
Come on.
Isn't Rob Savage... Isn't that the dude from... I don't know. I'm thinking
Wonder Years.
Oh, what was that? Oh, it
Fred Savage. Fred Savage. And then that's his brother was in Boy Meets World. I can't remember his... Corey.
Like Topanga.
Yeah, that one.
Yes, I remember it well.
But we're not here to talk about 90s, like, young adult comedies.
That's next edition.
Not yet.
Cool. Well done for mentioning Host. I think that's such a good shout. Well done, man.
Really,
that's
fantastic.
Really cool.
And we might have to rewatch that now.
Yeah. And also, it's only an hour and a bit long because obviously it takes part in what Zoom is. Because obviously with Zoom, you can only have an hour and a bit.
See the countdown, don't
you?
Which is just brilliant.
It is really well done.
Great if you needed the toilet in the cinema as well. You'd be like, right, I've got 39 minutes to go.
Let me just do a brief rundown. I'm going to sound like I'm talking from like the old radio top 40 here.
I like it.
At number 10, you have Saint Maud. At number 9, you have the Netflix adaptation of the Stephen King short novel 1922. At number 8, you have M. Night Shyamalan's The Village. At number 7, you have Daniel Radcliffe in The Woman in Black. Number 6, you have The Others, a Nicole Kidman spooky classic. Number 5, you have a cheating one of the Fear Street trilogy. And number 4, you have Sinister. Number 3, Haunting in Connecticut. And at number 2, the online spookfest that is Host. Your honourable mentions were 28 Days Later, The Haunting, and The Limehouse Golem. So... Ollie Green, what is your number one horror film of all time?
I feel like this is a really pretentious answer, but I'm going to say it anyway. So, The Shining.
Ooh, okay.
Mainly because it is, I mean, it feels a lot of time, it's a long film, but I just love it. I love it from start to end. Even the intro is just so intense. It's that 70s, 80s vibe of it being really drawn out, the music being really pitchy and loud and just really intense. A family go to stay in a ski resort, in a hotel, in the middle of nowhere, basically, to keep it running throughout the winter. They need the heating and stuff to work, otherwise, like, the pipes burst. Mm. The previous sort of janitor, caretaker, sort of lost his mind, but Jack Nicholson as the dad goes there, and he's like a budding writer, and he's going to write stuff while he's there, and there's going to be so much time to do lots of stuff. Bit by bit, this massive hotel that was full of punters during the summer is just getting quieter and quieter and quieter until there's only him, his wife, and his son left. Mm. Now, popular culture, you all see the kids going down on the trike, down the corridor, the two little girls, the twin girls standing at the end of the corridor, the bar scene where Jack Nicholson is kind of talking to a ghost. It's just really slow paced, beautifully shot, spooky, mind blowing stuff to me anyway.
I completely Personally, I don't find it scary, but I do find it unsettling for sure. And I think it's another example, like 1922, of Stephen King kind of using the landscape to create this unsettling atmosphere for his characters to kind of play in. And Jack Nicholson as Jack Torrance is just so wonderfully unhinged. You know, his face is just so iconic, and you know, he does such he can do such amazing things with his face, you know, that make him look incredibly sinister. And yeah, it's just got so many wonderful moments that just stick in your head, and of course has inspired lots of kind of mimicry in pop culture.
The Shining. Yes.
I think you're right there. I think it's not particularly scary. It's that it leads your mind down a really strange road of what would you do if you were isolated for all that time? And would you go, I mean, people go mad, being mad in inverted commas. People lose their minds by being alone and being isolated and having that community. Well, we know that from the pandemic, the mental health rates have gone sky high. And that's not why I like it. It's not a comparison at all, but it's just, where do people's minds go when they're unoccupied and there's weird stuff going on? That's why I like it. But yeah, I don't think it's particularly scary. It's more it just takes your mind into other realms. It takes my mind there anyway.
For sure. And I think it is definitely another example of is this real or is this in his head? And I think because the mum doesn't seem to experience any of the sort of paranormal happenings, presumably because she's completely occupied with looking after her son, making sure that she's looking after her family. Obviously Danny, the son, does experience some things, but it's a question mark, I think, of how much of it is paranormal and how much is in Jack's head.
I think it is. I mean, you guys have both said so many good things about it. I too am in the camp of, I've never found it that scary, but that's my own personal thing, because when I first saw it, I was very young and I didn't understand it. And then I just watched it as years go by and was like, oh, so that means that. Right, I get you. But what I will say is that you mentioned about the isolation and how it's kind of, you can reflect that to COVID times. And you know, The Shining is, let's say The Shining and Dr. Sleep, which is its sequel. I'm not sure if you've seen it or not.
No, okay. Sorry.
Well, basically, The Shining is very much like lockdown. Yeah, we're all confided to this one space. And then Dr. Sleep is essentially how we're free now. We're able to do this, but we still got to be a bit cautious. So it's interesting. I'm sure that's not how it was meant to be, because obviously Dr. Sleep was made written years ago. But again, it's a good comparison. What I will say about The Shining is, and I mentioned this to somebody else recently, there's a fantastic documentary, I think it's on Netflix or Amazon, called Room 237, which is the story behind all the conspiracy theories that Stanley Kubrick put into it. Like, there's a lot of Navajo images. There's a lot of mentions of space and whether or not Kubrick actually directed the moon landing, you know, these sort of things. What is it? There's a recurring number 42, I think it is, throughout it. I can't remember.
Sure.
Yeah, but I think the people who think those things and get a different reading from these films, fair play to them.
I mean, that's what I love about movies in general, not just horror films and stuff. You take out what you want from them.
Yeah.
And at different stages in your life. Like, I might watch The Shining now and get a completely different reading of it to what I did 2 years ago. If you don't watch The Shining for anything else, just watch it for the 1970s, 80s decor. That's just enough to keep you entertained.
It's intense. Yeah. There's a very interesting thing where I'm not sure if you know this, but the layout of the building and because you see the building at the very start, and mm-hmm. people have worked out what the actual map is, and it's still a mystery about where the windows should be and whatnot. So it's really interesting, really, yeah, really interesting.
There were things that were done intentionally to unsettle you and make you feel out of sorts, and you know, not know exactly where you are supposed to be in the hotel, which I think is a brilliant way of, you know, when Danny is cycling around the different floors, it's kind of like he's suddenly on a different floor somehow just by turning a corner, and it's all very confusing for sure.
Yeah, and you do, I mean, you do get buildings like that. I don't know, like, if you, when you first start a new school, like when I first started high school, like, how unsettling is it to not know where you are?
Yeah, yeah.
And even, so I work in a palace, and this building is on such a weird angle. From the outside, we're never kind of sure what window matches up to what interior room.
Yeah.
And it is freaky, because you're like, oh no, that's definitely the library. And they're like, no, it's not, it's the dining room. And you're like, is it? And then you have to go in there, and then you lean out what you think is the dining room, and it's not, it's the boudoir. And you're like, where am I? Where am I? It can't be that hard. Yeah, that whole idea of being lost as well in isolation is scary, I think.
With no booze as well. Gah.
With no booze.
And no
TV.
I've
got loads of booze downstairs that I've not opened since August. How good is that?
That's amazing. That's really good.
I know. Well done, me. Of course.
That's, well, all I'm going to say is that it's a fantastic number one film. Thank you so very much for coming up with that list.
Yeah, no doubt, the classic, definitely.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, actually, thinking about why I like these films and what draws me to them.
Mm.
There's definitely a theme. I think I probably need to go see a psychiatrist after this.
We can just talk more, it's fine. It's probably about the same.
Yeah, I've got daddy issues. That's reverted to the beginning, where he sat me down and watched, allowed me to watch Stephen King's It. There was also another film, not a horror film, but Full Metal Jacket. I remember him allowing me to watch that.
Wow.
And the guy getting his head, shooting like his brains out in the bloody toilets.
Yeah.
And it's not really acceptable for a 5-year-old, is it?
So, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't really watch that when you're 5 years old. No.
You probably would have, though.
I did. I probably
there
did.
There we go. And the link is there.
Well, thank you again, Ollie. It's been so fascinating to hear you talk about horror films.
Is there anything that you'd like to promote before we leave you?
Well, I think it would be a wasted opportunity if I didn't promote my history podcast. So I started the podcast during lockdown, like a lot of people, I believe. I kind of jumped on the podcast bandwagon. People really like listening to me talk nonsense about history. So you feel free to search the History Emporium and Powell's podcast. It's available on all platforms. It's very much like what we've had now, a very non-stuffy chat about history. I'm a big believer in things being accessible for everybody, not just the academic. So if you've got an interest in history and the macabre, because that enters quite a lot into the podcast, then yeah, please just look me up. That'd be amazing.
Most definitely. I mean, I will flat out say, as I know you personally, I have gone on a walk around with Ollie, and he's described history to me. And
I was just like, Matt, look at that building. Look at that building. Look at it.
I will flat out say, it was actually interesting. Even to this day, I've started looking at brickwork. I don't know when it's from, but I've been like, Ollie would know.
Your mind was blown, wasn't it? When we were basically looking down the street. And I was like, yeah, that brickwork's from the Victorians. That's Edwardian. And I said, that's from like 1939. He was like, how do you know that? They all look the same.
They're bricks.
They are bricks. Yes, they are bricks. He's just like, they just look the same. I was like, trust me. And then what was it? We were walking down the street as well. I was like, yeah, that was built in 16 whatever. And he's like, how do you know that? I was like, it's written just there above the door. I should have just kept alluring that I just knew everything
yes.
about brickwork.
Well, yes, I will flat out recommend History Emporium Plus. You know, I think it is just such a fascinating and, like you say, non-stuffy. It's not like one of these overly educated buffoons banging on about history. It's Ollie chatting away. And it is just a fantastic and brilliant podcast. Yeah,
very, very, very accessible.
Yeah, it is awesome. Keep up the good work, mate.
Oh, thanks, guys. I'm feeling the love in the room.
Good.
All right, well, until the next one, take it easy, mate, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a blast.
No worries. Thank you for joining us.
Bye, mate.
Bye.
That was the fantastic Ollie from History Emporium Pals podcast. I will say that I absolutely love that guy.
Yes, that interview was the first ever time I had met him, spoken to him, and instantly one of my favourite people.
Exactly. He is such a cool guy. I just like him. He's only gone and bloody moved up to Scotland. He was living in London, and now he's gone to hang out with Robbie Burns. I mean, figuratively speaking, of course.
Well, you know, if you didn't know, Ollie is indeed a wanderer.
Mm-hmm, he is. Can't keep his feet down.
Yeah, and I'm very jealous of Scotland right now. Enjoy him while you can.
Yes. Good luck, Ollie. We wish you nothing but love and success.
Make sure you subscribe to the History Emporium and Pals podcast.
He's also very, very good and prolific on Instagram.
Indeed.
He always posts. You just can't get rid of him.
Nor would you want to.
Exactly. Have you got some links for us?
I certainly do. You can follow us on Twitter at Chainsaw Royal. We are on Instagram at RPCM_podcast. And you can email us on rpcmpodcast@outlook.com.
.com?
Indeed.
So yes, give us a follow, give us a like, leave a review where humanly possible. And next up, we are going to interview the wonderful Poisoner's Cabinet. I know, Nick and Sinead. I love those guys. I love their podcast. I just think it's the most amazing and hilarious thing out there.
Yes, we had a bit of a fanboy moment during our interview with them, so look forward to that.
Yes. That should be coming out at some point next week.
So until then, have a wonderful week and goodbye.
Toodles!